A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about the concept of fusion in acceptance and commitment therapy. The way he understands it, fusion is when someone becomes unhealthily attached to a belief. Maybe like a person whose entire sense of self-worth is wrapped up in their job title. He wants to know if that maps onto how ACT theorists actually use the term, and what techniques ACT therapists use to break that fusion. There's a lot here.
There is, and his instinct is basically right. Fusion in ACT is a technical term. It means getting caught up in your thoughts to the point where they dominate your behavior and awareness. The full phrase is cognitive fusion, and it's the opposite of what ACT calls diffusion. When you're fused with a thought, you're not just having the thought. You are the thought. It's consuming your attention, it feels absolutely true, and you're acting on it as if it's reality rather than a mental event.
It's not merely believing something strongly. It's that the belief has swallowed the believer.
And the job title example is a really clean illustration. If I'm fused with the thought, I am my job title, then losing that job isn't just losing employment, it's losing myself. The thought and the self become indistinguishable.
Which would explain why some people have what looks like a complete identity collapse after a career change or a layoff, while others seem to roll with it.
The event is the same, but the degree of fusion determines whether it's a practical problem or an existential crisis. And here's where ACT gets interesting. It's not trying to change the content of the thought. It's not saying, replace, I am my job with, I am more than my job. That's more of a cognitive restructuring approach, which is what CBT would do. ACT takes a different path entirely.
This is the fork in the therapy family tree. CBT wants to challenge and replace the thought. ACT wants to change your relationship to the thought.
That's the core distinction. ACT was developed by Stephen Hayes in the 1980s, and it grew out of his own experience with panic disorder. He found that trying to argue himself out of anxious thoughts just made them louder and more persistent. So he built a framework where the goal isn't thought replacement, it's psychological flexibility. Can you hold the thought lightly? Can you see it for what it is? A string of words, a mental event, and still choose behavior based on your values rather than on thought-driven urgency?
Diffusion is one of the six core processes in ACT, alongside acceptance, present moment awareness, self as context, values, and committed action. The hexaflex, they call it.
The hexaflex, yes, and the processes are all interconnected. You can't really isolate diffusion from the others, but diffusion specifically is about creating space between you and your thoughts. Hayes has this line, you cannot stop the waves, but you can learn to surf. Diffusion is the surfing lesson.
Which is a very Californian way to put it.
It is, and I say that with affection, but the research supports it. There's a meta-analysis from 2015 in the Journal of Contextual Behavioral Science that found diffusion techniques reliably reduce the believability and distress of negative thoughts, and the effects hold up across a range of clinical and non-clinical populations.
Let's get concrete. If someone walks into an ACT therapist's office and they're fused with, I am worthless unless I'm productive, what does the therapist actually do?
A classic starting point is the milk exercise. You take a word, say worthless, and you repeat it out loud rapidly for about 30 to 45 seconds. What happens is that the word starts to lose its meaning and becomes just a sound. The semantic satiation kicks in, and suddenly, worthless is just a noise your mouth is making. The idea is to give the client a direct experience that a word is not the thing it represents.
Does that actually land for people? Or do they just feel silly repeating a word while a therapist watches?
The silliness is actually part of it. Introducing a little humor and play around a thought that's been treated as deadly serious can itself be diffusing. But the evidence suggests it genuinely reduces believability. There's a study by Masuda and colleagues from 2004 where they had participants do the word repetition exercise with a negative self-referential word, and both the distress and the believability dropped significantly compared to a control condition.
I'm trying to picture a donkey repeating worthless for 45 seconds and suddenly feeling better.
I probably just feel hoarse. But the point isn't that one exercise cures anything. It's that it gives you a felt sense of what diffusion is, so you can practice it in more naturalistic ways. Once you've had the experience that a word can lose its power, you start to notice other opportunities to step back from your thoughts.
What are some of the other techniques? The milk, milk, milk thing is the one everyone has heard of, but I assume the toolkit is deeper than that.
One of my favorites is, I'm having the thought that it's almost absurdly simple. Instead of saying, I'm worthless, you say, I'm having the thought that I'm worthless. You're literally adding a linguistic frame that puts distance between you and the cognition.
Which sounds like the kind of thing that would annoy someone who's suffering. Oh great, so I just add a prefix to my despair and everything's fine?
That's a fair reaction, and ACT therapists acknowledge that. The prefix isn't a magic spell, but what it does is introduce a tiny gap, a moment of awareness. And over time, that gap widens. You're not trying to make the thought go away. You're trying to see it as a thought, not as reality. Russ Harris, one of the major ACT trainers and author of The Happiness Trap, calls this naming the story. If your mind keeps telling you, I'm incompetent, you learn to say, ah, there's the I'm incompetent story again. You don't argue with it. You just name it and get on with your day.
There's that story again framing. That's interesting. It treats the thought like a familiar radio station rather than a command.
And that's a good segue into another technique, radio doom and gloom. You imagine your negative thoughts being broadcast by a ridiculous radio announcer, maybe with an absurd accent or a cartoon voice. The content doesn't change. The relationship to the content changes.
You're basically turning your inner critic into a Monty Python sketch.
That's not far off. And there's a serious mechanism at work. You're disrupting the literal, serious, fused relationship with the thought by introducing play. Play is inherently diffusing. You can't be simultaneously fused with a thought and playful with a thought. They're incompatible states.
Didn't Hayes write about singing your negative thoughts?
Yes, to the tune of Happy Birthday. Try singing, I'm a complete failure and everyone hates me, to Happy Birthday. You can't do it without the thought losing some of its gravitational pull. The musical frame breaks the literality. The thought becomes an object you're manipulating rather than a truth you're obeying.
The musical equivalent of taking a scary mask and putting it on a puppet.
That's a great image. And there's a whole category of these techniques that involve externalizing the thought. Leaves on a stream is one of the most widely used. You visualize yourself sitting by a stream, and each thought that arises, you place on a leaf and watch it float away. You're not pushing the thoughts away, you're not arguing with them, you're just letting them pass through awareness without grabbing onto them.
Ah, leaves on a stream. That's almost meditative.
It is meditative. It draws directly from mindfulness traditions. ACT is sometimes described as a third-wave behavioral therapy, and one of the defining features of the third wave is the integration of mindfulness and acceptance-based strategies. The first wave was pure behaviorism, Skinner, Watson. The second wave was CBT, Beck, Ellis, which added cognition but still focused on changing thought content. The third wave, ACT, DBT, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, shifts the focus from changing what you think to changing how you relate to what you think.
If someone's fused with my worth equals my job title, a CBT therapist might have them examine the evidence for and against that belief, look for cognitive distortions, and build a more balanced thought. An ACT therapist would have them learn to see my worth equals my job title as a story their mind tells, and then focus on what they actually value doing, regardless of what the story says.
That's the distinction. And it matters because for some people, the CBT approach can backfire. If you've spent years fused with a belief, trying to argue against it can feel like more of the same internal battle. The thought has already colonized your mental landscape. It's the one running the debate. So when you try to challenge it, you're essentially giving it more airtime, more neural real estate.
The thought strengthens the neural pathway, even as you're trying to weaken it.
For deeply internalized self-critics, thought challenging can become just another form of self-criticism. I shouldn't think this way. What's wrong with me that I keep thinking this way? It's the critic turning on the critic.
Diffusion sidesteps the whole battlefield. You're not fighting the thought, you're just noticing it and walking past.
And the metaphor ACT therapists often use is the passengers on the bus. You're driving a bus, and you've got a bunch of noisy passengers, your thoughts and feelings, shouting at you about where to go. You can't throw them off the bus. But you don't have to let them grab the wheel, either. Diffusion is learning to drive with the passenger shouting without letting them steer.
The passengers are still there, still loud, but you're driving toward your values anyway.
That's the committed action piece. And this is important. Diffusion without values-driven action is just dissociation with better branding. The point isn't to detach from your thoughts so you can sit on the couch and do nothing. The point is to detach from the thoughts that are blocking you from living a meaningful life so you can actually go live it.
That's a crucial caveat, because you could imagine someone using diffusion techniques to just numb out. Oh, there's the I should call my mother story again floating down the stream.
Right, and that would be a misuse of the framework. ACT is fundamentally about psychological flexibility, which includes being able to contact the present moment and act on your values. If you're diffusing from thoughts that are actually pointing you toward things that matter, you're not doing ACT, you're doing avoidance.
How does an ACT therapist help someone distinguish between a thought that should be diffused from and a thought that's actually worth listening to?
That's where values clarification comes in. The values are the compass. A thought isn't evaluated by whether it's true or false. It's evaluated by whether acting on it moves you toward or away from your values. If the thought, I should call my mother, aligns with your value of being a caring family member, you don't diffuse from it, you act on it. If the thought, I'm worthless, so there's no point calling anyone, is blocking you from connecting with people you care about, that's the one you diffuse from.
Truth takes a back seat to workability.
That's a very ACT way to put it. ACT is radically pragmatic. It doesn't ask, is this thought true? It asks, if I let this thought guide my behavior, does it lead me toward a rich, meaningful life? If the answer is no, you don't need to disprove the thought. You just need to stop letting it drive.
Which is almost unsettling if you're used to the idea that therapy is about correcting distorted thinking. ACT is saying, your thinking might be accurate, and it still might not be worth listening to.
Some negative thoughts are factually correct. You might actually have failed at something. You might actually have been rejected. The question isn't whether the thought is accurate, it's whether fusing with it helps you move forward. And often, even accurate negative thoughts, when fused with, lead to behavioral paralysis.
I failed. Therefore, I am a failure. Therefore, there's no point trying. The logic is coherent, even if the conclusion is destructive.
And the diffusion move isn't, you didn't really fail. It's, you're having the thought that you failed, and you're also a person who values growth and learning, so what do you want to do next? The thought becomes information rather than identity.
Let's go back to the job title example, because I think it's a really rich one. Someone's entire self-concept is, I'm a senior vice president at whatever corp. They get laid off, and suddenly they're not just unemployed, they're nobody. How does an ACT therapist work with that?
The first step is usually helping the client see the fusion. They might not even realize they're fused. They just feel like their life is over. The therapist might ask, if you weren't a senior vice president anymore, who would you be? And the client's answer, or inability to answer, reveals the fusion. Then you start introducing diffusion work around the specific cognitions. I'm nothing without my title. People won't respect me. My career is my identity. You might have them practice saying, I'm having the thought that I'm nothing without my title, and notice what shifts. You might do the passenger on the bus metaphor with the specific voices that come up around career and status.
Then the values work. What actually matters to this person beyond the title?
Because the title was probably serving some deeper value. Maybe competence, maybe contribution, maybe being seen as capable. The question becomes, how can you live those values in a new context? Maybe the value was mentoring younger colleagues. You can do that without the VP title. Maybe the value was solving hard problems. You can do that anywhere. The fusion with the title has blocked the person from seeing that the underlying values are portable.
The diffusion isn't just about feeling better. It's about unlocking behavioral flexibility. Once you're not fused with my worth equals my job, a whole range of possible actions opens up.
That's the clinical mechanism, and there's research supporting this. A study by Hinton and Gaynor in 2010 looked at the effect of diffusion on willingness to engage in challenging tasks, and they found that diffusion increased task persistence even when the thoughts about the task were negative. People were still having the thoughts, "This is hard, I might fail," but they were less governed by them.
Which is basically the psychological equivalent of feel the fear and do it anyway, but with an actual evidence base.
With specific techniques for doing the feel the fear part differently. It's not white-knuckling through anxiety, it's changing your relationship to the anxiety so it takes up less space in your decision-making.
I want to poke at something. If diffusion is about creating distance from thoughts, is there a risk of overdoing it? Of becoming so detached from your own cognition that you lose touch with genuine insight or moral conviction?
And it's one the ACT literature takes seriously. The answer is that diffusion is context sensitive. It's a tool, not a lifestyle. You diffuse from thoughts that are unworkable, thoughts that lead to avoidance, rigidity, suffering. You don't diffuse from thoughts that help you live your values. If the thought, "This situation is unjust and I need to act," moves you toward values, consistent behavior, you don't diffuse from it, you lean into it.
It's not about becoming a detached observer of your own life. It's about being selective about which thoughts get to drive.
And ACT has a concept called self as context, which is distinct from diffusion but related. Self as context is the ability to observe your thoughts and feelings from a perspective that's stable and transcendent, rather than being completely identified with every mental event. It's sometimes described as the difference between being the chess piece and being the chessboard. The chessboard holds all the pieces, all the moves, without being any of them. That's a healthy observer perspective. Not dissociative, not numb, just spacious.
The chessboard metaphor is elegant. The board doesn't care whether the knight goes here or there. It just provides the space for the game to happen.
The board isn't threatened by the pieces. If a pawn gets taken, the board doesn't shatter. That's the kind of relationship to self that ACT is cultivating. Not a self that's defined by any particular thought, feeling, or role, but a self that can hold all of those experiences without being destroyed by them.
Which connects back to Daniel's question about the job title. The person who's fused with their title is like a chess piece that thinks it's the whole game. The diffusion work is helping them discover they're actually the board.
That's beautifully put. And it's not an intellectual discovery, it's experiential. You can't just tell someone you're more than your job. They've probably heard that 100 times. The diffusion exercises create a direct, felt experience of that truth. When you sing, "I'm nothing without my career," to "Happy Birthday," you're not being persuaded. You're experiencing the thought differently. The shift happens at a visceral level.
Are there any diffusion techniques that work particularly well for the kind of fusion Daniel described, where identity is collapsed into a single attribute?
There's one called the Observer Exercise or the Continuity of Consciousness Exercise. The therapist guides the client to notice that there's a part of them that has been present throughout their entire life. The part that was there when they were a child, when they were in school, when they had their first job, when they got promoted, when they got laid off. The content of their life has changed constantly, but the awareness that witnesses those changes has been continuous. That awareness isn't defined by any of the roles it has occupied.
You're helping them contact a sense of self that's independent of narrative.
And for someone fused with a job title, that can be revelatory. They've been a student, an entry-level employee, a manager, a VP. The titles changed, but the person experiencing those titles was the same consciousness all along. The title was never the self. It was always just an experience the self was having.
That's almost spiritual. I can see why ACT sometimes gets described as having Buddhist underpinnings.
Hayes has been very open about the influence of mindfulness in Eastern contemplative traditions on ACT. The difference is that ACT operationalizes these concepts in a way that's testable and teachable in a clinical setting. You don't need to adopt a spiritual framework to benefit from diffusion. You just need to be willing to try the exercises and notice what happens.
Let's talk about what fusion looks like in everyday life outside the therapy room. Because I think a lot of people are walking around fused with thoughts they don't even recognize as thoughts.
Fusion isn't just for clinical populations. It's a universal human phenomenon. Anytime you've been completely caught up in a worry, unable to focus on anything else, that's fusion. Anytime you've had an argument in your head with someone who isn't there, rehearsing what you'll say, feeling the anger as if it's happening right now, that's fusion. Anytime a critical comment from someone has ruined your entire day, fusion.
The argument with someone who isn't. There is such a universal experience. You're not in the present moment. You're not solving anything. You're just fused with a mental simulation.
The simulation feels completely real. Your body is responding, heart rate, stress hormones, as if the confrontation is actually happening. That's fusion in action. The thought isn't being experienced as a thought, it's being experienced as reality.
What about positive fusion? Can you be fused with a positive thought in a way that's problematic?
Yes, and this is under discussed. You can be fused with, I'm the best at what I do, in a way that makes you brittle, unable to receive feedback, unable to learn, unable to collaborate. You can be fused with, my relationship is perfect, in a way that prevents you from addressing real problems. Fusion isn't about the valence of the thought, it's about the rigidity of the relationship to it.
Even accurate positive thoughts can be problematic if you're fused with them.
Because the problem isn't the content, it's the inflexibility. If you can't step back from, I'm excellent at my job, when someone offers constructive criticism, the fusion is blocking growth. ACT would say, hold that thought lightly. Maybe you are excellent, maybe you're not. Either way, the question is, what action moves you toward your values right now? And that question remains the same regardless of whether the thought is true.
This is where ACT diverges pretty sharply from the self-esteem movement. The goal isn't to feel good about yourself, it's to stop letting your self-evaluations run the show.
That's a huge point. Hayes has been critical of the self-esteem agenda. He argues that chasing high self-esteem is itself a form of fusion. You're fused with the idea that you need to think well of yourself in order to function. And that sets you up for a constant internal battle because self-evaluations fluctuate. ACT says, what if you didn't need to evaluate yourself at all? What if you could just notice the evaluations as they arise? Ah, there's the I'm great story, there's the I'm terrible story, and focus on living your values regardless.
That's a radical reframe. The entire self-help industry is built on improving self-esteem, and ACT comes along and says, maybe the whole project is misguided.
It's not that self-esteem is bad, it's that making it the goal creates a fragile foundation. If your ability to act depends on feeling good about yourself, you're going to be paralyzed whenever your self-evaluation dips. And it will dip, that's just being human. ACT offers a more stable foundation. Act on your values, whether your self-evaluation is high or low. The evaluation becomes irrelevant to the action.
Which is freeing if you can pull it off. You're not waiting to feel confident before you do the thing. You're not waiting to feel worthy before you apply for the job. You're just doing the thing while your mind does whatever it does.
The paradoxical finding is that when you stop trying to control your internal state, the internal state often improves on its own. Not always. ACT isn't promising happiness. But the reduction in the struggle itself tends to reduce suffering. You're no longer suffering about your suffering.
The pain about the pain.
And that's often the bulk of what people are actually dealing with in therapy. The original pain, the anxiety, the sadness, the self-doubt, that's just part of being alive. But the layer of, I shouldn't be feeling this, what's wrong with me, I need to fix this. That's the fusion, and that's where a lot of the suffering lives.
Let's get practical for a moment. Someone's listening to this and recognizes themselves. They're fused with a thought, maybe about their job, their relationship, their body. They're not in therapy. What can they try on their own?
The naming. The story technique is probably the most accessible starting point. Just notice when your mind is running a familiar narrative and label it. There's the, I'm not good enough story. There's the, everyone is judging me story. Don't try to make it stop. Don't argue with it. Just name it and notice that you're the one doing the naming, which means you're not the story itself. You're the one aware of the story.
That tiny shift in perspective is the beginning of diffusion.
It really is. Another simple one, thank your mind. When a negative thought shows up, say thanks, mind, not sarcastically. Your mind is trying to protect you. It's just not very good at it. Thanks for the warning, mind. I'm going to do this anyway. It sounds absurd, but it works because it frames the thought as a well-meaning but overzealous advisor rather than as reality.
Thanks, mind. Feels like the psychological equivalent of nodding politely at a stranger on the bus who's telling you about the end times.
That's the exact energy. You're not fighting the stranger. You're not trying to convince them they're wrong. You're just acknowledging them and going about your day. The thought is still there, but it's not in the driver's seat.
What about the physicalizing techniques? I've read about writing the thought on a card and carrying it around.
Yes, that's a good one. It's called physicalizing the thought. You write the fused thought on an index card and you carry it with you. The thought is now an object you can hold, look at, put in your pocket. It externalizes the cognition and makes it tangible. Some therapists have clients put the card in their shoe and walk around with it. The slight discomfort is a reminder that the thought is there, but it's not stopping you from walking.
That's almost literalizing the metaphor. The thought is a pebble in your shoe. Annoying, but not disabling.
Over time, you might find that you stop noticing the pebble. The thought is still in your pocket, but it's lost its charge. You can look at it and think, oh right, that old thing, and get on with your day.
I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier. The idea that diffusion techniques can sometimes feel silly or trivializing. I imagine there are people who would hear, sing your negative thoughts to happy birthday, and feel like the therapist isn't taking their suffering seriously.
That's a completely legitimate concern, and a good ACT therapist would address it directly. The playfulness isn't about minimizing the suffering, it's about loosening the grip of the thoughts that are causing the suffering. But if a particular technique feels invalidating, the therapist should switch to something that lands better. There's no one-size-fits-all diffusion exercise. Some people respond better to the more contemplative approaches, leaves on a stream, the observer exercise. Some people need the absurdity. The art of ACT is matching the technique to the person.
I suppose the silliness itself can be therapeutic if it's introduced with care. The thought has been treated with immense seriousness, maybe deadly seriousness, and the playfulness is a way of saying, you can relate to this differently.
And sometimes the most powerful diffusion moments come from humor that arises naturally in the session. The client says something like, I'm a complete failure, and then laughs at how dramatic it sounds. And that laugh is diffusion happening in real time. The therapist doesn't need to do anything except notice it and maybe say what just happened there. The client has spontaneously stepped back from the thought and seen it as a thought. That's the whole thing.
The therapist is partly just helping the client notice when diffusion is already happening.
That's a big part of it. Diffusion isn't always something you do. Sometimes it's something you notice. The mind naturally diffuses all the time. You have a thought, you let it go, you move on. The problem isn't that we can't diffuse. It's that we get stuck on certain thoughts, and we need help unsticking.
The stuckness is the issue, not the thinking.
And that's why ACT doesn't pathologize having negative thoughts. Everyone has negative thoughts. The question is, can you have the thought without the thought having you?
That's a good line to sit with. The thought having you...
It's the distinction between, I have a thought that I'm worthless, and I am worthless. In the first case, you're the container, and the thought is the content. In the second case, the thought has colonized the container. Diffusion is decolonization.
Which brings us back to Daniel's question about the job title. The title colonizes the self. The person doesn't have a job, the job has them. And when the job goes, it takes the self with it.
The diffusion work is about restoring the proper order. You are the context in which the job, the title, the career, all of it appears. None of it is you. It's all content. You're the container.
Once that shift happens, the person can actually engage with their career more freely, because they're not protecting their identity every time they make a professional move.
That's the paradox. When you're less fused with your career as identity, you can actually be more effective in your career, because you can take risks, receive feedback, pivot, fail, and learn without it threatening your sense of self. The fusion was never helping the career. It was just making the career a high-stakes existential game.
The fusion was the thing making everything harder.
Fusion never makes things easier. It might feel necessary. I have to be vigilant about this, but the vigilance is exhausting and the rigidity is limiting. Diffusion isn't about not caring. It's about caring without being consumed.
I think that's the note to end on. The prompt asked what fusion is and how ACT therapists try to break it. Fusion is when a thought stops being a thought and starts being your reality. Diffusion is the collection of techniques, from word repetition to naming the story to singing your inner critic to happy birthday, that help you step back and see thoughts as thoughts. And the goal isn't to feel better. It's to live better. To act on your values, whether your mind is cheering you on or telling you you're doomed.
If you're wondering whether this is just intellectual game playing, the evidence says it's not. Diffusion reduces the believability and the behavioral impact of negative thoughts. It increases psychological flexibility. And it does it without requiring you to win an argument with your own mind, which, for a lot of people, is a battle they've been losing for years.
The war ends not with victory, but with a change of relationship.
That's it. That's the whole thing.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early 20th century, a prominent German ethnologist named Max Schmidt argued that the quipu, the knotted string recording devices of the Inca, were actually a form of pre-Columbian writing that encoded full phonetic language, not just numerical data. This theory was mainstream in German anthropology for nearly two decades before being definitively abandoned when researchers demonstrated that quipus operated on a decimal accounting system with no phonetic component whatsoever.
I feel like I just watched a scholar confidently walk into a doorframe.
Knotted strings as phonetic writing. That's the academic equivalent of insisting your cat is fluent in French.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. Find us at myweirdprompts.com. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. We'll be back.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.